Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology of political life. It's the economy, stupid, has long been a political mantra. So what can politicians do when the economy feels like it's having a psychological meltdown? To discuss the government's autumn statement, the psyche of chronic inflation, and the impact that it all might be having on politics going forward, I'm thrilled to be joined right now by Jim Pickard, Chief Political Correspondent at the Financial Times. Hello, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Now, you are somewhere very important and very relevant to what we're talking about today.
You can hear Big Ben in the background. Can you hear it?
Oh, it's just literally chiming the three-quarter hour. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, literally right now. So I'm in a room in the House of Commons, which is just outside the press gallery where we watched the budget a couple of hours ago. And straight after the budget, or the autumn statement as we call it, there's a huddle of about 100 journalists who cluster around a Treasury political spokesperson and a Treasury head of press. And they do a kind of spiel about what all these different measures mean. And we're handed all these documents. There's the Treasury's Red Book is what it's called. And then there's also the OBR's forecast and another document. And then there's a third document about the income distribution impact of various different measures. And we're basically trying to read all this stuff while listening to these spokespeople and then asking them loads of questions. But that's I'm on a green sofa, literally 10 yards away from where that happened a few hours ago.
That is magical. You're giving us the perfect setting, the perfect backdrop to my questions for you tonight. It's a very different type of couch to the one that I'm used to, obviously, but it'll have to do for tonight. Given that you were in that huddle and you heard the speech live, but then you also had that debrief, what would you say was the most eye-catching moment for you in that autumn statement? What did you think stood out?
So I think that the thing about every budget that I have watched professionally, and I've been an FT journalist for 23 years, I think, and of those I've probably done about 15 years in as a political reporter, so I've got quite a long track record of covering these things. And I mean, bizarrely this year we've had, depends how you count them, but we've had about five fiscal events or budgets or quasi budgets because of all the political turmoil. And what tends to happen is that whatever you think was the most interesting thing on the day sometimes turns out to be the most interesting thing, but quite often people pick up on something else, or there's a political rebellion against one particular policy, or events put a different gloss on the announcement. So whatever I say today needs to be taken with a pinch of salt, for the reason that, you know, people often look back at these things in a rather different perspective. But I think what stands out for me today, I would say firstly, the macroeconomic situation we find ourselves in is basically unprecedented for the last few decades. You'd have to go back a very long time to remember a period with such high inflation, coinciding with rising interest rates, coinciding with the public finances in such desperate straits, and also political turmoil at the same time. So I mean, before we talk about the actual measures of what the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has decided to do, I just think, you know, some of the figures being put underneath our noses, they were pretty scary, I suppose, in a way. You know, for example, the Office of Budget Responsibility thinks that interest rates, they might peak in a couple of years, but they're not going to go down back to where they previously were. Energy bills are going to be problematic for a long time to come. The OBR also thinks that house prices are going to fall 9% over the next 2 years. I mean, that prediction could turn out to be an underestimate of what happens. It's basically a sea of red ink all around us.
Mm. And as you say, those external factors like inflation hitting a 40-year high this week, and the fact that you have covered previous budgets or non-budgets, autumn statements, however they've been described. And as you say, we've had four or five this year, all with very different titles, probably to mask the fact that they were all budgets. But how, historically, how susceptible are UK budgets to these external factors like global energy prices, food price rises, US inflation rates, for example?
Yeah, so I mean, the interesting thing about this is that it's happened only a month after the disastrous mini budget of Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng. We had that whole summer of Liz Truss saying, "I, as your prime minister, I'm going to cut loads of taxes and ignore the fact that Britain's got these vast debts and fiscal black hole. I'm going to cut a load of tax, and that's going to generate so much economic growth that everything's going to be rosy." We, of course, had the markets reacting in a very malignant way, which is what everyone had warned her throughout the entire summer. And as soon as Jeremy Hunt came in as Chancellor, first under her and then under her successor, Rishi Sunak, the first thing he did was reverse most of those tax cuts, unfunded tax cuts. And so the question that raises is, well, if they went back on that mini budget, then how come they're still having to raise taxes and cut public spending? And that is a much bigger issue, which is those external factors that you were talking about, which is that the economic prognosis for the UK is pretty negative right now. And a large amount of that is imported from overseas. It's inflation caused by spiking energy prices, caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But politically, and sorry if this is a very long, complicated brain bubble here, but politically, what this means is that the Labour Party are not going to allow the ruling Conservative Party to blame external factors. They are going to say, well, actually, it's not a coincidence that this has come a month after your disastrous mini budget. You, the Conservatives, destabilized the economy, you destabilized Britain's reputation in global financial markets, and therefore you need to carry the can as well. And there's a fascinating corollary of what happens over a decade ago when the fag end of the new Labour government under Gordon Brown got hit by a global crisis, the financial crash. And yet the ruthless opposition Conservative Party at the time under David Cameron blamed Labour, said it was all their fault. Gordon Brown should have fixed the roof when the sun was shining. And we are going to see the opposite happening here, where once again, it's external factors primarily, but Labour are not going to lose the opportunity to blame the Tories.
And that, of course, is politics in a nutshell, isn't it? It's about who owns the narrative. And certainly in our relationships, we make sense of the world by telling stories to ourselves about our lives and about our position in the world and the people that we interact with. And I was thinking about a narrative that also needs to be accommodated by Jeremy Hunt, which is that we have not seen chronic inflation like this for decades. So, how psychologically troubling would it have been for the Chancellor, for the Treasury, to know that in addition to everything that you've said, in addition to those two different twin narratives of who's to blame, there is also a fundamental problem, which is that there are so many people in this country who have not lived through inflation ever before.
Yeah, I mean it's an enormous problem, and if you think about home ownership, and we were talking about narratives just now. One of the big narratives of the Conservative Party has been, for a very long time, it's been the party of getting ahead, becoming prosperous, owning a home. You know, never underestimate the extent to which the Conservative Party is associated with home ownership, and unfortunately, a lot of those people who own homes at the moment are already being hit by rising mortgage rates as a result of rising interest rates, as a result of inflation, which is a result of global inflation. And those rising mortgage rates are going to be excruciating for a lot of people, especially people who have taken out mortgages relatively recently and therefore have borrowed large multiples of their incomes. And, you know, certainly in my adult lifetime, when I first bought a flat 20 years ago, in mortgage rates were what, 4 or 5% or something, and then they just crashed to effectively zero. And a lot of people who bought a home in the last 10 years have never known anything other than incredibly low interest rates, and therefore the shock of having to pay 40, 50, 60, 70% more than they were paying as their fixed term mortgages come up for renewal, or as their floating rates go ratchet up along with Bank of England interest rate, it's very worrying, and something that, you know, you obviously know that it's conceivable that things can change and that interest rates could go up, but no one as far as I know, was seriously predicting 12 or 18 months ago that interest rates would go from, you know, you could get a fixed rate mortgage at 1%, and now it's 5 or 6%. It's just not something psychologically I think that people were really ready for.
And do you think, therefore, that the Chancellor today has prepared people? Or do you think some of the kite flying that took place over the last, let's say, 2 weeks of the things that could have been in the autumn statement, pretty much everything that got leaked to the papers does appear to have found its way into the autumn statement. Do you think enough has been done to prepare the electorate for what's going to happen, how painful this is all going to be?
So what Hunt wanted to talk about, amongst other things, was the fact that they are protecting benefits, which are going to rise in line with inflation, and the state pension's going to rise with inflation. So they have certainly found the money to sort of, you know, in their political jargon, to put throw an arm around people. And the energy price cap, what's fascinating there is that you remember under the original version of that, Liz Truss wanted to help everyone in Britain for 2 years with this price cap. They suddenly decided a couple of weeks ago, actually, we can't afford that. That's going to run out in the spring. And then we'll have a higher cap. And that new cap is going to be £3,000 for a typical family instead of £2,500. But where they have found something like £12 billion is to provide relief on that front for a very large number of people on benefits, pensioners, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think a lot of the focus of the autumn statement has been on helping people who are very low income. I think there's less support for people who you might, you know, casually describe as middle England, people on, you know, who are holding down jobs, maybe do own their own home. You wouldn't classify them as poor by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, they are facing difficulties on all fronts. We've seen the price of food go up by 16% over the last year. If they're public sector workers, their pay is being held down by much less than inflation. If they have a mortgage, the mortgage repayments are going up. If they're renting, the rent's going up. And their energy bills will now be jumping from what was £2,100, if you take away the £400 one-off payment, going up to £3,000. That's a 900 quid increase. So it's not just that one element of your cost of living is rising. It's just these rises on all different fronts. And it's a very difficult time for households in this country. And therefore, of course, politically, it's very, very difficult for whoever's in charge.
And that's one particular audience for this autumn statement, that the electorate, the people who pay taxes, the people who receive benefits. But of course, there was another audience that I'm sure Jeremy Hunt was having to focus on, and that would have been the markets, not least because of this other narrative that you and I have alluded to, which is, you know, how did the budget that wasn't a budget of Kwasi Kwarteng a month ago, how it spooked the markets, how has that been rectified? And what I observed was that many of those spending cuts that Jeremy Hunt announced are actually in effect, they've been pushed to after the next election. So I was wondering how you felt he had done in terms of calming the markets. Did he do enough or did he do too much actually? How have the markets reacted?
I honest answer is I've been so busy writing stuff all afternoon that I've not seen what's happened to sterling or to gilt yields. I mean, when you look at the unfunded tax cuts that were introduced by Kwasi Kwarteng and the disastrous mini budget, there are some that have stayed. So there was a cut to national insurance, there was a cut to stamp duty. They are staying for a little while. The really big ones on income tax and on corporation tax, they were jettisoned almost immediately when Jeremy Hunt came in as chancellor. You remember Liz Truss got rid of Kwarteng in an attempt to save her premiership. She brought in the much more staid Jeremy Hunt. And so a lot of that has already been reversed several weeks ago. I mean, the problem they've got, though, is just that while they were firefighting on that front, they realised that the OBR forecasts for growth and just for the wider economy were much more dismal than anyone really thought. And thus this need to identify an inverted commas fiscal black hole, which is they tried to plug with today's statement. There's a whole different debate to be had, though, about whether this fiscal black hole is an actual thing and whether they're being too bearish. But that's kind of a whole different question.
And also there are, again, other global factors that could impact on that, just in terms of our cost of borrowing, and that's going to be really hard to anticipate. But I guess if you're the Treasury, if you're the Chancellor, you can only really deal with what things are on the day.
Yeah, I mean, when Liz Truss was still Prime Minister and Kwasi Kwarteng was still Chancellor, I remember having a breakfast with Jacob Rees-Mogg, who was Business Secretary at the time, and he was making this, was it a coffee? But he was making this very strong point that, you know, one reason why gilt yields were going up in the UK, it wasn't just because of the mini budget, it was also being driven largely by what was happening with the Fed in the USA. The Federal Reserve was putting up interest rates, and, you know, yields on gilts and other government bonds issued around the world do tend to sort of move somewhat in lockstep. I think where that was a slightly flaky argument was that the markets basically took fright not the day before the mini budget, which was when the Fed made that particular decision, but they literally took fright within minutes of Kwarteng sitting down from doing that mini budget. So, you know, you can blame external factors, but you can't blame them for everything. And certainly the mini budget did spook global markets, and in particular the fact that 2 days later Kwarteng was still talking about the need for more tax cuts.
And that's right. In particular, it did seem to, the market seemed to be holding its nerve throughout most of Kwasi Kwarteng's budget until he got to the surprise announcement about the 45p tax rate, and at that point everything seemed to fall apart.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the Sunday, I think it was on Laura Koonsberg's show, he talks about we've got more up our sleeve. I should say as well that you can hear people walking past me coming and going. I'm afraid that's just a function of me doing this from inside the House of Commons. I hope you can still hear me.
I can hear you very clearly. And I think what people are loving is the fact that this is a live moment where people are talking about it and discussing it around you, which is great. I think because you were talking there about the markets, I was just wondering, aside from the autumn statement, there was another psychological moment, and I sort of psychological watershed this week, where it was announced that the stock exchange was kind of worth less than the Paris Stock Exchange, and I wondered that's not the week to have that kind of information. How do you think the city would be reacting to that?
Well, I think if I was a Brexiteer, I would say, well, you know, this is partly a function of the fact that sterling is a bit weaker in recent months, and therefore because the value of the Paris exchange is in a different currency, it's in the euro, therefore that would be one explanation. And as sterling strengthens in due course, then it could tilt back the other way. And the figures were very, very close. It was kind of a fraction of a percentage point between the two valuations. But psychology is important, and especially when you're talking about soft power, which is what having the biggest stock exchange in Europe is all about. It projects the soft power and the strength of the City of London. And it's just another of those symbols which I would have thought for most free-thinking people will again raise the question of, are we sure that leaving the European Union has been so good for our national preeminence and our place in the world? Or is this just another little sign that maybe global Britain is not doing so brilliantly? I also wanted to chat about the psychology of fiscal drag. Should we talk about the psychology of fiscal drag? Because I think that's another fascinating thing. So, you know, often with these budget announcements, it's what's not in the numbers is as interesting or more interesting than what the government is putting in front of the public. And one of the weird things you get as an economic journalist or a political journalist is that you get given basically the red book that the Treasury puts out, and the OBR as well. They're very, very diligent at telling you what the effect is going to be of a new policy that was announced today. So, and if I sound exhausted because my brain has been reeling from going through page after page of, you know, this is what policy change means for tax income next year and all the way up to 2028. And this is what this change to health spending means. And, you know, so they sense all that beautifully. But what they don't do is they don't tell you what changes in circumstance of recent years or recent months mean for previous announcements. So We had all these different fiscal announcements in Rishi Sunak's budget in early 2021 when he was Chancellor. He wasn't Prime Minister then. And one of the things he set out was he set out a freeze in the thresholds at which people start paying income tax and at which point they start paying the 40p rate and they start paying the 45p rate of income tax. Now, it's one of those things that I've never spoken to anyone in the pub about. It sounds kind of boring. People don't necessarily notice the point where they start paying income tax. But the reason I'm limbering up to this is because what inflation has done, having 10% inflation means that as people's salaries rise, they get swept into these higher tax brackets or they start paying income tax for the first time. And that one policy announcement from Rishi Sunak last year, which came into effect in April this year, is set to raise over the next 4 years, 30 billion quid. And that is equivalent to a 5p increase in income tax. And the reason I'm telling this very long, complicated, I'm making this very long, complicated point is just to say, I don't think the public have yet noticed, but it's a 5p increase in income tax, or it's equivalent to that. And if a Chancellor had stood up in the House of Commons and said, I am raising income tax by 5p, people would go nuts. The newspapers would go nuts. It would be the splash in every newspaper. But because it's done through the back door, it's something called fiscal drag. And you know, in our lifetimes, it's not really been a thing because inflation's been close to zero. You get inflation close to 10%. That is one of the weird consequences of that. And there are quite a few thresholds that they're freezing again today for another 2 years, all the way through to 2028, and raising even more money from that.
So what pressure will that put on the unions, who will obviously be seeking to have really high inflation-busting pay rises for their members across, you know, across industry-wide? But if that does happen, then they run the risk of tipping many of their members into different tax brackets.
Yes, so the there's a throwaway line in the OBR report today saying that something like 3 million people over the six-year period, because it happens very gradually, over the six-year period, something like 3 million people start paying income tax for the first time, and something like 2.5 million people are going to start paying the 40p rate for the first time. I mean, these are massive numbers. I mean, as to your question of where it leads the unions, I mean, you've got
inflation at 10%. Because the optics, they're always going to have to be seen to be fighting for their members, trying to get a better pay rise. But there's going to be an unforeseen penalty to that.
Yeah, so the difficulty here is that, and we haven't spoken about the spending cuts for the departments. The way that Jeremy Hunt has arranged this is basically that spending cuts will occur, but not straight away. You've got a couple of years where overall departmental expenditure, it's squeezed a little bit this year and then, or next year, and then the year after that, before the election, it actually goes up. There's quite a bit more money for health and education. Mm. And then suddenly there's this dramatic squeeze where I'm just opening my little, it's called the Red Book, but for some weird reason it's green today. I don't know if that's because it's the autumn.
Someone is colorblind.
And not the spring budget. But yeah, total spending policy decisions, they're actually spending an extra $9.5 billion in 2023-24. But then by 2027-28, there's a $30 billion cut to public expenditure. And the idea of that is it's basically a trap for whoever wins the next general election and makes it very difficult for Labour to say what they might do. But anyway, the point about the squeeze on public expenditure by departments is that although it takes a couple of years to get going, even in the short term, departments that aren't health and aren't education, it may look as if they're not experiencing a cut, but the money they're getting is pretty flat. And they are having to find any pay rises for workers in their area out of that expenditure. So if, you know, you're the levelling up department, I don't know if they're responsible for firefighter pay, but let's say they are, if they want to give firefighters 10% rise, then they can do it, but they're going to have to find cuts somewhere else. And so it's a complete headache for ministers that will only get worse after the election, unless by some miracle the economy improves and therefore the public finances improve as well.
Well, finally then, talking of the election, how do you see this autumn statement? Do you think it could revive Tory fortunes? Well, it looked like it was the final throw of the dice, but has it actually worked? I guess we won't know until the election, and there isn't going to be one tomorrow, I guess. But what do you think?
No, and we won't know for a little while. And people's voting decisions are made on a whole panoply of factors, and some of those factors are economic. Some of those factors are cultural. You know, one of the reasons why Boris Johnson got such a big majority in 2019 was not only because he projects the kind of economic positivity which you may or may not believe in, but culturally, that message of we're going to get Brexit done and we're a bit suspicious of some kind of lefty things that you'll hear from the Labour side, but particularly the whole Brexit thing, we'll get tough on immigration, which preceded the Brexit vote. That was probably more of a driving factor for how people voted. And the kind of personality of Boris Johnson versus the personality of Jeremy Corbyn, those were kind of bigger factors than necessarily the economy, because however bad things get, you have to presume that the opposition would do a better job before you actively switch from one party to another. But I mean, I feel like all my answers have been so long-winded, but to conclude this very long-winded answer, I think, you know, they're basically on a tightrope. They went too far one way a month ago by having a massive later on funded tax cuts. Critics will say that they've gone too far the other way with this retrenchment, fiscal tightening today. I think they would privately say, cough, cough, wink, wink, haven't you noticed that this fiscal tightening is basically takes 2 years to really kick in? And therefore, let's wait and see. But they are a little bit at the mercy of outside events, I think.
Well, from my couch to your green leather sofa, Jim Pickard, thank you very much indeed for being my guest on the couch.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.